This is Louis Trapani of Doctor Who Podshock, and you're listening to The Sci-Fi Party Line.
Sci-Fi Party Line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line. This is your hostess, Kat. I have Eric and Louis Trapani from the Podshock podcast, Doctor Who podcast, that has been on, what, forever? Like, 10 years, right?
It seems that way. No.
And it is, like, an honor to have you and stuff like that. I'm going to stop drooling.
Well, but, hello, and it's an honor to be here on this show. It's a delight to have both you and Eric here on the Sci-Fi Party Line. It's a great honor to be here.
Well, thank you very much, sir. Today, we're going to be talking about Sarah Jane Adventures. I was going to say Sarah Jane Smith, but blah, 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 whatever.
I thought you might have said Chronicles, but I'm glad you
didn't. Yeah, I always do that. And Eric had to say, dude, it's not Chronicles, it's Adventures. So, you know who I am. So, Sarah Jane Adventures, it's a kids show, UK Doctor Who spinoff. And the reason why we're talking about it is because Doctor Who decided to go on a hiatus and leave us high and dry with no episodes or anything. So, we have to really talk about David Tennant anytime he shows up. And he showed up in an episode of the Sarah Jane Adventures. So, we're going to talk about that. It is called the Wedding of Sarah Jane Smith, and we know that weddings don't go well in the Doctor Who universe. I just haven't seen them well. So this episode,
they normally don't go well in any universe, but
sounds like you have some experience.
No.
No, I'm just kidding. What did you think about this one overall? In relationship to, do you watch it regularly?
Are you speaking to me or Eric now?
Yeah, I'm speaking to you.
Okay, I didn't want to step on anyone's toes.
Yeah, no, we do stepping on toes here, so don't worry about that.
Well, I do watch it regularly, and I have to be honest, the first time, I just was rewatching it right now before the show, just to kind of refresh, because it's been almost a week ago since it was on, so I did want to kind of refresh myself with it. But I have to be honest, the first time I saw it, I have to say I was a bit disappointed with it. I understand it's a children's show, but it was, I just felt that it would have worked better if, and of course we're reviewing this episode, so if you haven't seen it yet, there's going to be spoilers in this podcast. So, character Peter Dalton, I think would have worked better if they were to introduce him, let's say, in episode one of this series, and then save this story for later in the series towards the end, and have him build up, have the relationship establish itself, because it just seemed so rushed that it was just hard to believe some of it. It was just, I realized they compressed time by saying, 3 days later, 3 weeks later, and they try to establish a length of time in episode one, but it just, just watching it, it was just hard to kind of believe some of the emotions on it, because we just met him, and we didn't really see any wooing going on so much, only like a couple, there was just like them having dinner a couple times, and I just thought it might work better, and it would have been actually, might have helped the series better by having another new character, and they could have played off, trying to hide their adventures from him throughout the series, knowing that he was involved with the trickster, and that's just my opinion. But anytime, even going back to my own childhood and watching kids shows at that time, I always like it to be intelligent and not to be played down to a lower level, and I just had some problems with some aspects of the story here, that this, that package was delivered and had that comical alien.
And, Oh, yeah.
You know, and it was obviously catering for some comic relief there, but it didn't really play any real significant part in the story, and it just seemed like it was just thrown in there as a goofy alien played for laughs. Mm-hmm. So just stuff like that just seems like to be catering for children and again, going to just the believability factor. I thought maybe it might have worked better when later on in the story when they're stuck in time, where you, they're in a loop, in a second loop. So, but they seem to be completely extracted out of everything because there's no other people there. Maybe if those other people were in the room that were still frozen there in that second, granted, it would be hard to do as far as shooting and all that. Like everyone would have to stand still for you know, for those scenes, but it would just lend some more credibility to it all.
So you're not being too hard on it.
I'm trying not. Actually, the second time viewing it, what I really wanted to get at, my real point was that I really enjoyed it much better now watching it again because probably because my expectations are different now and I'm more able to accept it for what it was. I just had maybe again what we as you started out with this episode, we had such a long gap between Planet of the Dead and this without seeing the Doctor at all, and you know, you were building up anticipation, expectations for this that was hard for this story to kind of meet.
So I don't hear any complaints about the Doctor's performance in all this. So what did you think about that at all?
I didn't have any problems with now it's interesting to know actually David Tennant's last performance as the Doctor.
What? It is?
Yeah, I mean,
in relationship to shooting?
Chronologically, this Waters of Mars takes place after this, and we have two other special. This is actually shot. This was actually David Tennant's last performance as the 10th Doctor to this date.
Oh.
So it's interesting seeing him as the Doctor and knowing, you know, putting yourself in David Tennant's in a sense and realizing that, you know, he's going through the motions and, you know, Alonzi and all that. And this is really his last time doing it all, you know, until they have a, you know, multi-doctor story or somehow he comes back. But this is it.
Wow. Okay. So, Eric, you've been a little too quiet. What do you think of the Sarah Jane?
Wow. First of all, I have to say, I'm just listening to Lewis Rain. I'm a little bit starstruck right now on our podcast.
Oh, stop it. You're making me nervous. Stop it.
No. Really, because I'm just sitting here listening.
I had you on our show before. You don't be starstruck.
I know, but I just, I feel like I'm just, you know, just in the background your show. But right now, listening to Lewis speak about the Sarah Jane episode, in my ears, I feel like I'm just listening to like the latest episode of Podshock. I don't even feel like I'm even in the room. I'm just kind of like in awe listening, like, oh, wow.
Stop it.
This is actually pre-recorded. This is actually the latest episode of Pop Talk I'm playing right now. I'm off playing something. I'm playing tennis somewhere. Tennis in my life.
Yeah, so I'm just completely, wow, out-of-body experience at the moment.
Okay, let's hold hands and step over.
Group hug.
So what after what Lewis has said about Sarah Jane Adventures, this particular episode, what did you think? What was your initial reaction?
First of all, we know it's a two-parter, and I was like, please don't pull the, we're just going to see David Tennant at the very end of the first episode, which of course, mm-hmm. the way it happened, okay, fine, I can take that, fine, you know, see what happens in the second episode. And I was not disappointed in the second episode. I thought it was a lot of fun. I found it interesting because I'm not the biggest fan of the Sarah Jane show itself. I haven't seen every single episode, but I've seen, a good amount of the first three series. Okay, I haven't seen any of the second series, but I've seen a fair amount of the show. And so it's not my favorite show in the world, but I did enjoy it. And I found it interesting because the last time we saw David Tennant as a Doctor was in Planet of the Dead, which didn't.
Buses.
I was very unhappy with Planet of the Dead, just without going deeply into that right now. I just was not happy with it. It was not my kind of episode. Yeah, it was cute and fun, but I wasn't really in the mood for cute and fun Doctor Who at the time. And I found it interesting with this episode because obviously, Sarah Jane, the show, tends to be cute and fun. And taken in this context of a show meant for a younger audience than the regular Doctor Who, it felt all okay to me. I didn't really have issues with it being fun. And, you know, obviously the Doctor wasn't... It wasn't like a meaty role for the Doctor to fill in this particular story. But I was still okay with that. I mean, because I listened to the recent episode of Radio Free Skaro last night. And on that show, Chris Burgess, one of the hosts, he really was not amused too much by this Sarah Doctor. Of course, he's not the biggest David Tennant fan as the Doctor anyway, but still, for him, he just... It was... He could barely take anything good out of it, but I was ecstatic. It's been months since Planet of the Dead. It was David Tennant. It was his hair was as bouffant as ever we've seen it.
Oh, my God.
And he was just racing around, and I think it was mentioned on the recent Podshock, the most recent episode, as well. I heard Cannon, Lewis, and James talking about how the part with the kids at the end going into the TARDIS and how that was pretty magical, and I felt it was pretty magical too.
Yeah.
I loved it. I mean, yes, there was a lot of what they call fan wankery everywhere, but you know what? I was fine with that. That's what I wanted. It was a fun time. And yeah, I didn't judge it like a regular Doctor Who. You know, give it more passes for the more simplistic plot. You know, it was fine. It's just a kid's show, and what a kid's show. I mean,
well, you have to judge it as a kid's show, you know, as something, you know, really for children, where Doctor Who is more of a family audience, so it's a mixture of both. Yes, it needs to be kid-friendly, but also it's meant for adults as well. So where this is really just aimed for children. So, you know, you find, and when you review these episodes, you got to review it maybe against other shows of that nature. You know, as opposed to reviewing it against a typical episode of Doctor Who.
Yeah. Well, as far as this episode, I think I really liked it. It was happy because my first experience with the spinoff was Torchwood, and I liked that at first. Then it got way depressing, and I had to stop watching it. So this one, to me, is like, I guess, the best of what a spinoff would be for me. It's very happy. It's very it looks like the Doctor Who universe without having Doctor Who in it. They have the same aliens. I've only watched this particular season just to get familiar with the characters, so I wouldn't be totally surprised with the Doctor Who episode. And I really like all of the kids. I think they're, you know, pretty cool. Clyde, I love him. Bonnie mm-hmm. and her parents are just, they're hilarious. Luke is, you know, I want to know more about him. I like Mr. Smith. I didn't know what that was about. I don't know how she got him or whatever, but I think it's kind of a little weird that she says, Mr. Smith, I need you. And I was like, well, that's kind of a weird way to, you know, address a machine, but whatever. K-9 was off doing something. I didn't know where he was, but he kind of saved the day in one of the other episodes. And so he was there for the Doctor to see. And it felt like a reunion of sorts, even though they didn't know each other. I don't know. It was just a really sweet episode. And, I gave it a lot of passes, too, mainly because, you know, I do agree with you, Lewis, that it felt rushed. They should have had him, the guy she was supposed to be all in love with.
Yeah,
but then there was a little little magic happening in there too, so
with the ring and all that.
But he didn't give her the ring
until they were married.
Yeah, so if he had given her the ring earlier, then we could have, you know, accepted the whole rush of the relationship or whatever. But it's a pretty cute show, and I was listening to Pot Shocking. One of the guys said that this show isn't that as popular as Doctor Who, you know, because it's a kid show. And I was wondering, is the ratings like on par? Is it just people don't like it? Or
it doesn't have the ratings as Doctor Who has, but it's still this story, and it should also be noted since we're talking about this story, part one of this story was, I think, if I'm not mistaken, probably the highest rated Sarah Jane Adventure, I believe. And this is just going off the cuff here. I'm going off memory. I think it was 1.3 million viewers. And you have to understand, this is actually shown on BBC at 4:35 p.m. on a Thursday.
Wow.
On a Thursday, and then again on a Friday. So we're talking about late afternoon television here. So It was actually out of everyone that was viewing, I think, of television on in the UK, television, that's one out of 10, I think, viewers were watching Sarah Jane Smith. So that's very popular, for especially for a children's show.
That is pretty good. How is this in ratings in comparison to, say, Torchwood?
Well, again, I think Torchwood is post-Watershed. It's I think it, you know, Torchwood gets much more higher ratings. It's for you know, more people to television at that time, as opposed to this is like I said, late afternoon, or I think what would be called tea time in the UK. So it's you know, it's kind of hard to, because it's like apples and oranges. It's like comparing even Oprah gets a you know, a large audience, but you compare that to one of the popular nighttime television shows.
It's, yeah, you got
its own time slot, really.
Sarah Jane compared to Oprah, only on Sci-Fi Party Line.
Yeah, I believe I heard on Radio Free Scarlet, the recent episode, I think they said that those numbers, that 1.whatever million, it was approximately double the regular ratings prior to the Doctor's appearance on Sarah Jane. So David Tennant showing up like doubled the figures of a typical Sarah Jane episode.
Well, it's part one got 1.3 million and then part two got 1.1 million. So there was actually a drop off. Could be, you know, I don't know what it could be, but it seemed kind of odd, especially since Tennant is mostly in part two. But
yeah, that's weird.
I don't know, maybe a Friday thing. Who knows?
It could be a Friday thing, that, or maybe they were just tuning in and were disappointed that David Tennant wasn't in it and maybe tuned out before they even got to the end.
Or perhaps, you know, there's also, I don't know what they call DVRs in England, and also the iPlayer, sure. And the iPlayer as well.
So would it be insulting that this show would do doubly well just because David Tennant shows up? How does that work? Because it's like, oh, it's not till David Tennant shows up that you want to watch my show. Screw you people. I mean, I don't.
Well, I think David Tennant was a big deal, but it's, you know, the series, it's made it to series three. So the series has to be doing well enough that it was brought back for series two and now series three. So, you know, it has to be in order for it to have done that. So I'm sure it does stand on its own very well. You know, the biggest factor right now is funding for children's television is, I mean, right with the economy right now, funding television, the first thing that's cut is children's programming. And that's something that Russell T. Davies was very concerned about and has been calling for advocates to come forward and champion children's television. And I know recently BBC has commissioned £25.5 million back to children's television. So hopefully this may bode well for maybe a series four of Sarah Jane Adventures.
Okay, I hope so, because it is a really cute show.
It's a cute show. And you had made a comparison before about, you know, maybe it was with Doctor Who and how this was similar, how this fits into the Doctor Who universe without the Doctor being in it. And I have to say, with it being in a half-hour format, it is very much like Doctor Who of yesteryear, where it was a half-hour format and each one had a cliffhanger. And this series, even though it's the other episode has a cliffhanger because it's it takes two episodes to tell one story. So, but you have those continuing cliffhangers where Doctor Who, right now, it's only when it's a part two or something like that, you get those dramatic cliffhangers at the end. So this is very similar to Doctor Who of years gone by.
Cool. That is awesome.
Howdy! Perfect timing!
Our orders are to take you with us.
Whose orders are those, then?
Colonel Stark, sir.
Colonel Stark? Then who's that, then?
Commanding Officer, Operation Fallen Angel, Groom Lake Army Air Base.
What? You mean Area 51? Dreamland? Oh, I've always wanted to go there!
Doctor, no. People that go there are civilians. They never come back.
I've heard all kinds of things about that place. None of it's good. They say they've got aliens there from the Roswell crash.
I know. I've always wanted to take a peek. Take me to your leader. Allons-y!
Okay, so there has been, I guess, a little clip of a Doctor Who cartoon going around, mm-hmm. and it's is the cartoon called Dreamland, Lewis, or yes. what is okay? So the whole cartoon and Dreamland is supposedly Area 51 in here in the New Mexico. Mm-hmm. Well, not here in New Mexico. I'm not there, but
in the U.S.
I mean, yeah, US. Roswell,
yeah. I went to Roswell. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought it was a pretty cute clip. I didn't have any problems with it. Is that Tennant's voice, right?
Yes, it's David Tennant, and also in that episode is Georgia Moffat, who played the Doctor's daughter a couple series ago.
Oh, okay.
Jenny, she's not playing Jenny now. She's playing a new character, a companion to the Doctor.
Okay.
It also happens to be David Tennant is romantically involved with at the time as well.
Lord have mercy. Okay. How long has that been going on? She's so young. What is that about?
Well, okay, if you follow, British tabloids, Tennant has a history going back since he's been playing the Doctor. He's been involved with a few of his co-stars on Doctor Who in the past, so it's kind of par for the course.
That is, I don't know what.
So,
how long is this cartoon? Is it supposed to be like a long-going series, or I don't understand. Tell me about it, all of it.
It's a series, but it's not a long ongoing series. It's they're actually going to be making short little episodes, maybe 6 minutes long. It's going to be on a CBC, the CBBC, which is the children's BBC,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to... there'll be a series of episodes. I'm offhand. I don't know exactly how many episodes. But then to get all together, I think it might all come together as maybe an hour story. If you take all those little 6 minutes episodes and string them together, mm-hmm. I think you'll have like 45 minutes or an hour worth of story.
Why are they doing this? I mean, what?
Well, they've done this once before. They did this a couple years ago with Freemer Adjerman was the companion, and they did an animated story.
Oh.
And yeah, and they sort of, it was again kind of like bridging, I don't know if it was bridging the gap at that time or not, but it was just extra material. I think I'm pretty sure it was on during the months that Doctor Who wasn't on, so it was, even though the gap was much shorter, it helped bridge that gap.
Okay. Did you like it?
The previous one?
The Dreamland.
I mean, this one hasn't been on yet, so, I mean, as we've only seen the preview clip. And the preview clip, I have to say, and Eric knows how I feel about this, that the animation is a little disappointing. We've only seen stills before this. This clip was the first time we've seen actual video motion of the animation. So, the animation looks very much, everyone's making comparisons to Dire Straits' video, Money for Nothing. If you remember back, yeah. If you remember back how the figures moved in that video, it's jerky and,
Maybe it'll look better in the final
We hope so. The second time I saw it, it was actually better. Again, maybe my expectations had changed and, I was more or less expecting it, but it was, it looks good, but not animated. If you take any frame of it, it looks kind of cool. But then when you see it in motion, it's just...
What about you, Eric? You're over there giggling.
Oh, what's that man. About? Because...
I saw something on Twitter that you said you were not amused about this.
Wow. I must say... Wow, I was very, very respectfully appalled by the clip when I finally saw it. I mean, because I don't want to be mean to the Doctor Who production crew in any way, but especially when, who was it that you had on your show on Podshock at the Who York meetup a while back? Was it Gary Russell or...
We had Gary. Yeah, it was a TWNY meetup, but we had him. We interviewed him while he was in the city for that.
Yes, Gary Russell. He's the director of Dreamland, and he's also works on Doctor Who proper as well. But he's the director of this
Sarah Jane Adventures as well.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And Gary Russell's the director of this Dreamland short, or whatever you want to call it. And he was on Podshock several episodes ago, and he was talking about how he saw, like, the dailies or whatever of Dreamland and was saying it was phenomenal 3D animation, you know, cutting edge. And so he really helped fill the expectation in my mind, like, wow, this is going to be great. Yeah. And then when I saw it, oh my goodness, wow. Because, yeah, I made the comment about the Dire Straits video on the Gallifreyan Embassy forums.
Uh-huh. Okay, but with you then.
Yeah, and also...
You said he looked like Woody.
Well, originally, and that would have been a compliment, I thought he looked like Toy Story, because David Tennant's figure, I mean, because he's like a wiry, kind of lanky character.
Like, when I first saw him, I was like, oh my god, he was right, he does look like Woody!
I can only wish that he looked like Woody, because at least Woody has, he looks like a, you know, floppy doll running across, a real-life doll running across the room, whereas this, wow, you know, and people complained about the Clone Wars animation in the film and series, because they said those characters looked a little bit wooden. Wow. Because I believe it was back in 1996, I believe there's a TV show, like an early morning kids TV show, Transformers Beast Wars. I believe it, in 96, it was the second, like, all CGI television show at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think Reboot or something was the first, and then Beast Wars.
Yeah, I was just going to say Reboot.
Yeah, and then Beast Wars came out after that, and that was the second CGI animated show way back in the primordial days of this kind of technology or art form, and that looked, Beast Wars looks a lot better than Dreamland looks. Dreamland looked to me, when you look at the special features of, like, a DVD movie, like The Phantom Menace or something, or Lord of the Rings, and they show you, like, the previous... Yeah, they show you, like, the pre-visualization that the artists use before they make the fish effects. That's what this looked like. Because when the characters...
It does look like that. Because that crossed my mind as well. Said, oh, maybe this is a pre-production video, and the final product is going to be a lot smoother. At least, I'm trying to be optimistic.
Wow. Because, you know, it's funny, because Lewis mentioned the Freema Agyeman Doctor Who animated adventure, The Infinite Quest. And Infinite that, Quest, yeah. Yeah, and that had a kind of... like, Flash animation kind of look to it. You know, like, Flash animated cell animation. And actually, those characters in the Flash animation style seem to have better movement and more expression. And they're just flat 2D. You know, they seem to have more liveliness than these 3D figures do that we just saw. When the three characters ran across the little desert... legs. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that was a little weird.
It is a little distracting, and I said if it's too distracting, I'll just treat it as an audio adventure and just, like, listen to it.
Oh
and
my
just,
god.
You know, glance up at key points where it's not where it's nonverbal stuff happening.
Yeah.
But David Tennant's right on mark. I think David Tennant is outstanding in it, you know, from what we hear in the clip, and I'm sure the other characters as well.
Yeah. It's almost disjointing because, yes, the audio acting is totally there, they're totally filling out their parts, but what I see on the screen is, like, a mannequin. Like, you know, David Tennant's, like, animated voice, but the mannequin is just like, huh.
That's the disconnect. Yeah, that's what throws you out. I mean, that's what's distracting. It's just saying, like, what's, you know, what's that figure? Why is David Tennant's voice coming out of this clearly not David Tennant figure?
Yeah, it was very Teddy Ruxpin or, like, the band at Chuck E. Cheese or Showbiz Pizza. I was like, what am I looking at here? This is very disturbing, the Auton version.
I think your expectations was way too high, because you told me that it was a cartoon, and I watched it. I was like, well, I mean...
But if anyone out there has seen... If anyone out there has seen even children's television done in 3D, it's come so far in this decade. It's come very far. So the standard's been set so high by every other show out there on children's television.
Will it make you feel better?
Oh, go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, I can only say maybe the budget wasn't there, and this was, like, you know, the best that the animation studio could, you know, do with what they had to, with the numbers they had, you know, to work with. And the time, perhaps.
Yeah, or it's just a pre-production, and you can take a deep breath, and maybe it'll look great next time. Yeah. Eric, can we go with that?
No, I'm okay with that. No.
It should be coming out soon. You don't have a date yet, but it should be coming out soon.
Oh boy, I'm kind of worried.
It should be out between now and also going back to the Sarah Jane Adventures. If you go back to episode story one, which was the prisoner of the Jadoon,
yeah,
it actually sets up the certain parts of that story that's setting up for Dreamland. They mentioned Dreamland in that story, and I think the spaceship that I don't know if you've seen it, the first story of the series.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that.
There's a spaceship that disappears, and I think that's the one that we'll see in Area 51.
That's kind of cute that they tied in like that. It's yeah, very clever.
State your name, rank, and intention.
They're on the roof.
Water always wins.
Okay, well, I want to move along and talk to you a little bit about, Lewis, Water of Mars. And has this been delayed, or am I dreaming about it
hasn't been delayed. It's actually, in reality, it's actually being pushed up, because originally these three specials were going to come out, you know, December, and then Russell T. Davies, but you know, sometime, I think it was in spring, said November-ish, and to quote him, November-ish. So then we were thinking, okay, it's in around November. Maybe it could actually be before November. Maybe, you know, it's a horror. It's a very horror-like episodes. It's, you know, it's a scary episode, so maybe it'll be on Halloween, you know, December 31st. It would still be November-ish. But we, as Halloween got closer and closer, and it became very apparent that that was not going to be the case. And so we were placing our bets on actually the 14th of November, and then, which is a Saturday. Traditionally, the new episodes come out on a Saturday, but this is actually coming out on the 15th, which is a Sunday.
So is it already done? Why are they taking so long?
It's done. I think, you know, this is something that we've been complaining about on Doctor Who Podcast, that we really had hoped that the specials would be more evenly spaced apart during this gap year. And we went from Easter, which was Planet of the Dead, to, here in the States, we have Thanksgiving. So it's almost from Easter to Thanksgiving in a U.S.-centric way of looking at it,
right,
of nothing, you know.
Yeah.
So it's been highly anticipated, and, you know, and because of that, maybe people are going to be let down by it, because, yeah, you know, we have such high expectations now for it. So I guess we'll have to wait and see, but it's less than, as we record this, it's less than 2 weeks away.
Yay, I can't wait, and I am pumped up, so I think I might be disappointed, because what was the desert bus? I can't even remember the name.
Yeah,
Planet of the Dead.
No.
I mean, it was cutish, it was good to see, but I'm really excited about this, because it does, from what I've seen, it does look scary. It does look like it's going to be something that we can sink our teeth into. Eric?
Oh man, it looks heart pounding to me. I've been avoiding all the clips now, because there seems like there's a new trailer out today. Yes, there's like a new one like every 2 days now. So I've stopped.
Yeah, we have it on our site. There's a new trailer if you want to check it out. If you want to check it out.
Yeah.
It might be a little spoilery, but
I want to save myself.
Yeah, I refuse.
For David Tennant.
Yeah, I've already seen the two or three that have already come out, and no more. I don't want to know any more. I'm just going to wait till the day comes and enjoy it then. Yeah, it looks fantastic from what I've seen so far. It looks really, really... I don't think this will be in any way a disappointment for me like Planet of the Dead was, obviously. But I don't know. I mean, I'm just really excited about Waters of Mars. I mean, come on. This is Sarah Jane, and that's all good. But this is just a little...
Yeah, we only talked about that a little bit anyway. So.
Yeah, but it's just to whet my appetite.
My fear of Waters of Mars is that it's all those expectations, and everyone's, you know,
true,
appetite is wedded. And
but how can we bring ourselves down? I don't even know how to bring myself down from the excitement.
Normally I temper my expectations with everything that I watch. I always try to downplay everything, but I'm just going to go in full reckless abandon on this one. So, you know, I'll just take my lumps if they come. I'm so psyched. I have not been this so long for Doctor Who. It's really amazing. It's really.
Oh, Lord. I can't wait.
Why won't you help, Doctor, if you know all of this? Why can't you change it?
Because you die on Mars. You die today.
The beginning of the end. Doctor Who, Sunday the 15th of November on BBC One.
Okay, guys, I want you to make me a timeline from now until the appearance of Matt Smith. What episodes are we looking forward to? When-ish, you know, how you know, about when are we going to see these things?
There's three specials that we will have. We have three specials and Dreamland before Matt Smith comes on. So Dreamland will... I think Dreamland will fit in either before or after Waters of Mars. Since Waters of Mars is less than 2 weeks away and we still haven't heard anything about a release date for Dreamland, I'm assuming now Dreamland will be in between Waters of Mars and the next special. And the next special is due out for Christmas. It'll be the Christmas special. And then we're assuming, this is just a pure assumption right now, that the following special will be on New Year's, the following Saturday perhaps. So that will be the final last episode of David Tennant before he regenerates, you know, the 10th Doctor regenerates into the 11th Doctor, and we'll probably see the first appearance of Matt Smith in that.
Okay. And then when Matt Smith appears, what type of, I guess, series timeline are we going to get a full series? Are we going to get this half?
Yeah, we'll get a full series. Next year, it will be a full series. It probably, if it follows suit with tradition of the last, you know, since the series came back in 2005, we're looking at either March or April before the first episode, full episode of Matt Smith. We'll see maybe the very tail end of the special in, you know, when David Tennant regenerates, of just him, perhaps. And then you won't see any more of him until his first episode, which will, like I said, will either be March or April.
Okay.
Now, there was a news report with, you know, that reported on them shooting one of the new episodes, and they said for a likely February transmission, which we're assuming was a mistake on the, you know, on the author's part, but you never know.
Yeah, February. They are killing us with the production on this. I don't... So did we ever get a reason as to why we got this crazy non-season? Because I don't recall ever reading or getting an official answer as to why.
Well, I think mainly it was twofold. One, because they knew that, you know, David Tennant last October had announced that he was stepping down. I'm sure he told the production team before he made the public announcement about that. So I knew, you know, they probably knew ahead of time that he was going to be stepping down. And this would he wanted to, you know, go off and do other projects as well. So this gave him the opportunity, the freedom to continue playing the Doctor in an abbreviated sense, and, you know, with a shortened season or just doing a series of specials. Meanwhile, the production team can gear up for the start of the Matt Smith series, because they're not only just changing the lead actor, they're changing the lead, the showrunner, which is Russell T. Davies. Stepping into his shoes is Stephen Moffat, who's going to be the executive producer and lead writer and be the showrunner of the series. So it's really a drastic change, not just because of the lead actor changing, but the whole how the production team is led is being changed as well. So it's a whole new era of Doctor Who, really.
Okay.
So we'll get a new Doctor, we're going to get a new outfit, a new companion, a new TARDIS interior.
Right.
So it's really, and in fact, they're, at least internally, they're calling this series one now.
Yeah, I was just getting ready to tell you. What did they ever figure? Are they, like, officially going to call this one? Is that going to be irritating?
Well, I don't know if they're going to use it publicly, because I, you know, well, I think it's going to be confusing. But then again, I said that in 2005 too. Calling it series one when it, you know, it should have been, you know, was it 27 at that time or whatever it was.
Yeah.
This one is actually 31, really, if you want to, you know, be technical about it.
Okay.
Your song is ending, sir.
What do you mean?
It is returning through the dark. You will knock four times.
Matt Smith.
Yes.
Is he... Eric, chime in on this too. Are y'all happy about the, are y'all really happy? Or are y'all just trying to be supportive about Matt Smith? Do you really?
I think it'd be unfair to judge him in any way without seeing his performance yet. So I think all this people that are judging him one way or the other are just being unfair. I mean, we have to go by what others who have seen him had said. Eric had mentioned earlier in this, you know, tonight about our interview with Gary Russell. Gary has seen him, and his opinion of him is very high. So far, everyone that we've spoken to that actually has worked with him and actually met with him have nothing but great things to say and feel that he's going to win us all over. And I feel the same way. You know, the proof of it will be when we actually see him. But until then, I think we'll have to hold off on our judgment. But I expect that he'll do fine. And everyone that's making a big hoopla about his age, he's only 2 years younger than Peter Davison was when he took the part. So
how old is he?
Don't judge him on his age. He's 27.
Oh, that's not that bad. I thought maybe he was like 19 or some crap. He looks really young to me. I didn't really know, but he's 27. That means he's not jailbait, so I don't have to feel like a cougar for like, oh my God, he's so cute. So, well, 27, that's a good respectable age for a doctor, I think, maybe. Well, who knows? Eric?
Well, his character is 900 and some odd years old.
Yeah, true.
Oh, he's got to be well past 1,000 by now, because I think he's just been saying 900 and something for the last few centuries.
It's sort of like people that are perpetually 29. Or...
Mm-hmm.
That's me. Yeah. And I'm like 76. No, I'm kidding.
A very foxy 76, I made.
Well, thank you.
Wow. Oh, okay.
Well, you hush up, Eric. So, Eric, are you excited? What are you thinking about
Walter Martin
and Matt Smith and the new TARDIS and the new logo? Did you like or hate the new logo? Because I loved it.
Yeah, oh, I do like it. I do like it a lot. But I wanted to chime in on Matt Smith first.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think I've said it a lot. Well, maybe not on any podcast. But, you know, a lot of people are concerned about his age. You know, he's so young. And I said it before, you know, I don't think the casting director or the producers, I'm sure they weren't seeking out a young person. I don't think that was their original intention, was to, you know, hey, we need to get someone who's really, really young to play a doctor. No, I don't think that was their intent going in, but I believe the fact that he got the part means that he was just that good, that compelling in whatever auditions took place, that they were just like, no, yeah. He's just that good, we just... Put age aside, this man needs to be playing the doctor right now. And so that's why I have a kind of a high anticipation, thinking this guy must be really good. Otherwise, I don't see why else they would have hired him, if not only for that reason. And another thing, you know, most fans I know of new Doctor Who currently, wow, I know more females than males now in this current climate of Doctor Who. Circa 2009. I know more female fans, and of them, vast majority are just in love with David Tennant, really, and that's why they're huge Doctor Who fans. And I know many of them are so worried. Oh, David Tennant is leaving, and many of the girls I've talked to, they don't like.
Because you know what? You want to know why? We're in love. Like I had a physical attraction to Christopher Eccleston. I was devastated when he left. I pouted about that for at least a year. And then David became my doctor, and you know, now he's hot. I think he's cute. And you have that where you're used to him, and you kind of have a little, you're not in love with him per se, but you can see yourself falling in love with this type of doctor. Now, you know, you have this other guy, he's young, he's different, and he has weird, wacky hair, and you want to, you know, be able to see yourself. Can I fall in love with this doctor? Is this, doctor?
That's kind of where I was going, because of those females I was talking about who are upset about David Tennant leaving, many of them have expressed that they don't think that Matt Smith looks initially cute or whatnot, that he just looks a little strange. And, I mean, that's, you kind of touched on it. That's exactly how I felt. Okay, Christopher Eccleston happens to be, even counting the classics,
the sexiest doctor ever.
Well, I was not going to say that, but I was going to say, Christopher Eccleston.
Oh, you were thinking of Eric.
I know. know he was thinking it.
No. Mr. Eccleston is perhaps my favorite doctor, or my favorite actor to portray the doctor of all time. And when I first saw David Tennant at the very end of Parting of the Ways, I mean, I was like, wow. I had no idea who he was at the time. And he looked pretty strange to me. He looked very young. And I had, just going off that, you know, 20 seconds at the end of Parting of the Ways, I really had a lot of trouble picturing this guy, you know, David Tennant, being the doctor. You know, I was completely apprehensive about what would happen after that point. And so, I mean, this should be no different. You know, obviously David Tennant turned out to be a great doctor. And
yeah, because he put on such a brilliant show in the Christmas special after that, with the hand and the fighting, and this is my fighting hand, and he pulled out a sword, and, you know, he just, I don't know, he really just like, I'm going to make you love me, and he did, you know, and from then on, you don't have any problems with Tennant. This guy, he's young. Does he have the experience to do that? Does he know? Does he understand sex appeal? Will he just rely on his goofiness to be, you know, strange to do? I don't know.
Well, you have to wait and see.
Yeah,
but Eric had a point earlier. I think, Eric, you're actually correct with your assumption. I think Stephen Moffat was going out looking for an older actor compared, you know, contrasting to David Tennant's youthful doctor. And he kept on going back to Matt Smith. And that was like that was a red flag right there, that even though, you know, they kept on, you know, interviewing and seeing other people to play the part, but they kept on going back to Matt Smith, and it was just an obvious choice for them. And their original intent was to, I think, to scout out an older actor.
Okay.
So there has to be something there to Matt Smith if everyone is, chiming in and singing the same song that he is the doctor.
I saw his initial like response to being the doctor, mm-hmm. and I thought he was kind of charming, and he was cute and stuff like that. So I didn't hate him. I don't hate him at all. And my initial response to him was, well, yeah, let's give him a chance. So I am going to give him a chance, but I'm just bringing up, you know, I'm playing devil's advocate here on, you know, why people may or may not, as far as females may or may not, you know, love him or whatever. But
it's very funny because I remember, this brings back, you know, all my memories going back to Tom Baker's regeneration to Peter Davison, because a lot of this is echoing going back to that time. Because for those longtime fans will remember that Tom Baker had a large female following as well. And, you know, everyone was, you know, really, and especially in the U.S., that's the only doctor that the U.S. really knew was Tom Baker as the doctor. He was the iconic, the doctor. So Peter Davison's had really big shoes to fill. And also Tom Baker was the longest actor to play the part in 7 years playing. He, you know, a lot of people had no recollection of any other doctor before Tom Baker. So he was the doctor. And then you had this very young Peter Davison coming in, and everyone was complaining, oh, well, the doctor's keeps on getting younger and younger, and now he's too young. But Peter Davison pulled it off, you know, and I suspect the same will be true with Matt Smith.
What do you think they're doing? Because I've looked at some of the pictures, and he looks like he's dressing, I guess, retro. Why do you think they're doing that? Or do you think they're going for some nostalgia with this guy, trying to, you know, make people, you know, feel a little nostalgia with liking?
Are you talking about
Matt Smith?
Yeah, his first initial photos that were released with him with the bow tie?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
I might
well,
not
each doctor
know
has
what I'm talking
own
about.
Looks, you know, and the doctor never dresses like everyone else, you know. So each doctor has its own his own unique look. So, and very often it's retro or many times it's Edwardian in style, you know, and it's always a non-typical look and an eccentric look. So I think that's what they're going after. And, you know, of course, he has to look different than any other doctor as well. Maybe a couple nods there. You know, Patrick Troughton wore a bow tie and braces, or as we call them in the U.S., suspenders. So I think maybe a couple nods to the second doctor there. But essentially, he has to be unique onto his own as far as his dress goes.
Okay. All right. Eric, anything to add?
Oh, no, I basically agree with that. And, and yeah, I mean, he definitely has a retro look. I mean, especially compared to Christopher Eccleston or David Tennant's Doctor, definitely a more retro look. Because they were, in a way, more modern chic, the 9th and 10th Doctor were. And Matt Smith definitely has the retro look in his costume. As has been noted many times on other podcasts, the TARDIS exterior is a throwback in of itself to an earlier period for the Doctor. So we'll have to wait and see if the Doctor's actual sensibilities and character also fall suit to maybe...
I think that Stephen Moffat now, as the executive producer and lead writer, I think his style is bringing back some of the classic elements that might have been left behind when the series came back in 2005 and reestablishing them. There have been rumors that the opening credits will have Matt Smith's face in the credits, as Doctor Who traditionally has done in the past, you know, starting with Patrick Troughton. And that may be the case. And I think there might be, again, just going back, pulling back some elements from the original series and reestablishing them in the current series may be the case. And I think being that Matt Smith is not wearing something that's more contemporary, that especially Christopher Eccleston was probably the most contemporary looking as far as style of dress goes, you know, where he could actually fit into current day, you know, Earth without any problems, really. You know, so he's more of the exception to the rule of all the other Doctors.
How long do you think they're going to keep Matt Smith? Or do you think he's going to change in 3 years? Or are they going to just yank him from under us after we fall in love with them? Or
Is it typical
for them to change this fast or as
well,
much?
Well, I think usually it's going to be at least 3 years. And I don't know what contract he had signed. I know back in 1996 with Paul McGann, when he was, where they were hoping that the movie, the 1996 movie, would relaunch the series. And they were hoping for a joint venture between a U.S. production team and the British BBC production, you know, doing it together. And at that time, Paul McGann was signed up for a 5-year contract. So I don't know if that's, if they're doing it, if they're renewing the contracts on a yearly basis right now or not, but I would assume my assumption would be at least 3 years and then they can continue on, you know, after that on, you know, depending on how they feel about it.
Okay.
So I would say at least 3 years, if maybe longer.
I have been warned about sort of what to expect, and I think that David's going to be quite a good source of information for that as well, because obviously he's dealt with it with great grace and sort of dignity and enthusiasm, and that's what it is about. I mean, and also I think you work so hard as the Doctor on Doctor Who anyway, you don't really get any time to be in the public eye, I don't know. I have talked to a couple of people about it, but I don't know, I'm just going to concentrate on the words on the page and let the rest unfold.
I want to ask just a quick, what did you think about Torchwood, the final, what is it, Children of Earth it was?
Children of Earth.
What did you think about that? What did you think about...
I thought it was outstanding. I thought Series 2 was... an improvement over Series 1, and I thought Series 3, Children of Earth, was completely, you know, established itself as, you know, it made up for whatever faults that might have been in the other two series, and it really, I think, for many, surprised many people because they, you know, they may have different expectations.
Oh, that was weird. I mean, you didn't have a problem with Yanto dying so soon after the other two guys had died. I mean, they don't really have a crew anymore.
Well, I think they can go anywhere they like right now. And again, this is science fiction, so don't forget that. You know, they could do a prequel of Torchwood with Yanto. I mean, look at Yoda. Yoda died in 1983 with Return of the Jedi, and we had three more movies, and now with the Clone Wars, and he's still hopping around and being Yoda, so you never know.
Mm. What is that? What is up with that series? Is it coming back fully, or is there gonna are they gonna Torchwood? Do many? Yeah, Torchwood.
Yeah, we don't know yet. We know there's interest. Obviously, Torchwood Children of Earth got phenomenal ratings. It was interest has really never been higher, you know, than now with Torchwood. So it's just a matter of giving the green light, and then I guess now that Russell T. Davies is in the U.S., logistically, I'm not sure how it's going to be done, but I'm sure they're ready to go once they're given the go ahead. They're ready to go, I think.
So this miniseries, why was this such a short one? Because I never figured that out. Because usually they have the long, like, multiple episodes, and this is just a little short thing. Are they running out of funds? Are people getting bored? What?
It's an interesting question. I'm not sure exactly the real reason for it all. I thought maybe perhaps it was akin to at first I thought it was the productions team's choice of doing it that way. I thought it was akin to the gap year for Doc 2. I thought maybe they needed to kind of take a break and regroup and all that and focus on just doing a mini series, five episodes and all that. But actually it was the BBC's choice. So I know
John Barrowman. Okay.
Was very disappointed at that, and he really wants the series to come back as a full series. That said, I mean, the miniseries worked very well, you know, on a consecutive night run of the five episodes did very well, and it kept everyone on the edge of the seat, and it kept them coming back, and it did very well that way. So what the future lies, I don't know, but that the ending of it really leaves it open for anything. And John Barrowman has said that he would like to continue playing the character indefinitely. So if that's the case, it could be, you know, the way it leaves off, he can appear. He can be anywhere, you know. For all we know, he could be on the next series could take place on a spaceship somewhere. You know, who knows?
Yeah, I believe.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I believe John Barrowman is going to stay on until he actually turns into the face of Bo.
Face of Bo. I was just getting ready to say that. I was at some point he has to do it.
As about the miniseries format, word around the water cooler at the time was, I believe people were saying that the BBC, they wanted to do that five-part miniseries deal just to make it more of an event. Yeah, make it an event piece, something that, you know, makes it stand out, makes it special, makes it, I guess, must-see TV in a way. And I was also wondering if perhaps that was part of the motivation to do what they did with Saturday Night Adventures this series, because usually they would just air one episode per week with Sarah Jane, although they still had the cliffhanger format. But
yeah,
now they do it
week.
Exactly, but now they do it Thursday, Friday, Thursday, Friday, Thursday, Friday. And I was wondering if that was like a mini takeoff of the Children of Earth experiment, was to try to, you know, build the anticipation, you know, on back-to-back days.
It also, another factor is that it fits nicely in that, you know, leading up to the David Tennant specials.
Yes, another reason. Yes.
Yeah, where if it was once every week, then it would have actually been some overlap.
So true.
Well, Lewis, I just wanted to talk Torchwood, you know, just, you know, throw that in. I had to, you know.
Yeah, and I wasn't able to be in our sci-fi party line.
Your crying about that. You had a chance to talk about Torchwood. He's never going to forgive me.
Caves of Androzani. I watched part two. Kat, I don't know if you've ever seen this episode. It's Peter Davison's last story as the Doctor, and it's very intense.
I'm ashamed. I haven't seen. I've only saw one old Doctor Who, and that was something where he went with the Mayans or something. And because I wanted to go like straight, like way, way back to the beginning. And
you talk about a William Hartnell story?
I think so. Where he went to
the Romans.
The Aztecs.
Yes, not the Mayans. It was the Aztecs. Yeah.
I knew what you meant. I just the story was.
I went back that far, and I was like, "Wow, this is going to be a long journey because that was hard to watch." So I really haven't.
Yeah,
you may want to explore maybe some of the more, when I say recent, I mean more recent than that, episodes before going back that far. I mean, some people want to go way back to the very beginning and watch them from, you know, episode one straight forward. But I probably might recommend for someone that's never been exposed to any of it to maybe sample, you know, maybe one of each Doctor first, and then if then you can choose where you want to go with it.
And actually,
I had a list at some point that people say, okay, these are the mandatory episodes, you must watch these. So I've been thinking about going back to that list and looking that way.
Oh,
but
yeah, I'll be happy to make a new list for you. Yeah,
make me a list.
Yeah, the first episode, the very, very, very first, the empty child. I mean, the empty child,
an unearthly child.
Unearthly child. That single 25-minute episode itself is actually a great primer before you get on with the rest of the journey.
Forget parts three and parts two through four, the Trial of Gum. Ignore that. Just watch the first one.
Yeah, it's a caveman story.
That lays the groundwork for the entire series.
Yeah, that's a good place to start, and then there's many more places to visit after that.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, don't deny yourself. There's some really great little gems out there, and you know, as Eric said, there are certain episodes that everyone kind of agrees upon or must-see episodes that are pinnacle episodes to watch, and the others will have debates on, you know, whether it's yay or nay, but there are certain key ones I think that all fans kind of agree upon, you know, and point to.
Is there any show that goes back and see, like, the whole Time Lords when they were, like, in their prime before the war? Do we ever go to Gallifrey?
Well, anything in the classic series, when you see the Time Lords, they still exist. It's only in 2005 onwards that, you know, this whole Time War thing has been established.
Yeah, definitely.
Anything prior to that, the Time Lords are around.
Definitely, the War Games. The last episode, the last story of the Second Doctor is perhaps the first time we see Gallifrey proper and the Time Lords.
I love that.
Yeah, and then one that I'm embarrassed to say I haven't seen yet, but will very soon. But everyone loves was it the Deadly Assassin?
You've never seen The Deadly Assassin?
Yes, yeah.
Seen The Deadly Assassin?
Hey, it just came out on DVD not too long ago, and I'm on top of it, you know? Maybe,
but you're a longtime fan. I thought you would have seen The Assassin.
I'm so disappointed in you.
In the early 80s. Come on, Eric.
Sorry.
My whole image of you is now being crumbling.
Now I wish I never brought it up, but... Because I hate
The Deadly Assassin.
But I've heard much.
Mary Whitehouse, which is a very outspoken, she's dead now, but she used to be a very outspoken critic of the BBC and television in general about, you know, TV being harmful for kids and all that type of rubbish. The Deadly Assassin, she blew a gasket over because of certain scenes that were in that. I mean, watching it now, even back then, it's mild, but it's always known, it's always been red flag as one of those episodes, because it's also an interesting story only because the Doctor is an adventure with the Doctor without any companion. So it's him going solo, in effect. And it's, you know, I wish they would do that more often, just to contrast the episodes where he is with a companion.
He seemed kind of alone in the last season because he wasn't with Fremont that much.
Right, and not without Donna.
The specials now, he's with a new companion with each special, so...
Call him a companion? They're just, ladies of the
week. Until they ride in the TARDIS, you know, as some fans will classify that as an official companion. If they don't ride in the TARDIS, they're not a companion.
They're not a companion.
Yeah. Yeah, but then you get debates over, you know, Sergeant Benton, Rose's mother, Adam. But yeah, we're not going to go into that right now.
Did Rose's mother? She didn't. Did she?
Briefly.
Army of Ghosts.
I miss Rose's mom. In fact, I miss Rose. There, I said it. I cried when she came back.
You may see her before the series, before the specials are.
I don't want to say anything about that. Yeah, I think that got spoiled for me in Second Life many, many, many months ago about Rose. But anyway.
Me like that, because you know I'll hold it against you.
Yeah, I'm just going by patterns that we've seen in the past, you know. And if you've seen, you know, other Russell T. Davies series finales, you know people from the past tend to make appearances.
Yeah. Yeah. She's not dead, so I'm okay with it. So, yeah.
She's off with some other figment of the Doctor.
Yeah, they never brought him back. Whatever, you know. He seems like a eunuch doctor, and I don't like that.
Oh, wow.
Good way of putting it. And I have to agree.
Oh, wow. I never even gave it that much thought before.
Like, why would you want the doctor that's a not doctor?
Classic doctor.
Wow.
What?
No, I don't know if I just heard what Lewis said right, but...
You heard right.
Okay, that's what I thought you said. Wow. You know, part of the reason why I'm so excited that Lewis is on here today, because just for everyone out there to know, I mean, Lewis and the podcast that he started, Podshock, is basically the reason I ever got interested in podcasts or even podcasting in general. If not for his show, who knows, I wouldn't even be here right now. No one would be hearing my voice right now, because Podshock was basically the first podcast I ever heard, you know, got me into listening to podcasts. And as we all know about podcasts, the appealing thing was at the time, you know, I looked up Doctor Who as the first thing I searched for in iTunes back then, because, you know, I lived like a whole life, my whole life as a Doctor Who fan, and never really knew anyone in person who was also a Doctor Who fan. So it just seemed like the logical thing for me to type in first, and boom, Podshock came up, and I started listening to it. And that was the first time I ever even heard any fans anywhere just talking about the show. And I mean, that's what the appeal was, and I know that's the appeal of, like, Sci-Fi Party Line. You know, a lot of people out there who, you know, talk about sci-fi, or at least think about it, and maybe they have friends locally wherever they are, but, you know, here we are giving a completely different take that everyone can, like, listen in on. And, of course, our show, we always have on, you know, different new guests, anyone who wants to participate, and so anyone can join in that. That's the beauty. It's the beauty of it to me, of just podcasting in general. So, yeah.
No, thank you, Eric. I know it's very flattering and humbling to hear others that are, you know, inspired by our show, or they find a whole new world of podcasting through our show. But that's basically goes back to the origins of the Gallifreyan Embassy and how it all began, is that we all were introductions to a bigger family. And, you know, I know before I started the Gallifreyan Embassy, and the reason why I started was because there was nothing available in our area. While there were other chapters in other locations, there was nothing here locally for local fans. So, you know, I created to fill the need, because it didn't exist at the time. And then fans came forward and they found us. And then through finding us, they found other conventions. And, you know, and now today with the internet, it's, you know, it's a global community, which is fantastic.
And might I say, your website looks fantastic. My God, that thing is organized.
Oh, thank you.
It is beautiful. It is a beautiful thing. And I love good-looking websites. So when I see one that's real organized and stuff like that, I just like, oh, my God, this person loves what they're doing. And, you know, in the end, that's what it's all about.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it's you know, you got to be passionate about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Doctor Who Podshock.
Okay, well, let's do it.
No.
Whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Lewis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep.
Hello.
James Norton.
Hello.
News.
Fabulous.
Reviews.
Oh, no.
And fan mail for James.
40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock from the Gallifreyan Embassy.
You know, that guy James was really cool. No, yeah, we blew that. Doctor Who
Podshock! I'm the Doctor, and who are you?
Who are you? I think we're going to wrap this one up. But before we do, I want to mention the Doctor Who Second Life meetup that you're having.
Oh, yeah.
In a couple of weeks, or?
It's the 14th of November, which is less than 2 weeks away now. It's the on Second Life. The land in Second Life is called Katrina.
That's
it's a whole name. Doctor Who.
What usually goes on at one of these events? I think I was there last time. I danced around, talked with some people. But what are usually these events for, and you know, what are they about? And
well, the Gallifreyan Embassy has been around since 1985, and we have back then. The Gallifreyan Embassy is a Doctor Who fan organization that I founded back in 1985, and at that time we held monthly meetings. And being that I'm here in New York. And so the Long Island, to be exact, we had them, and there's two counties here on Long Island. So we alternated each month, one in Suffolk County, one in Nassau County. And we would sometimes have joint meetings with other clubs that were in other states and so forth. But you were limited to a certain geographical location. And even today with conventions, you have to, and Eric may be joining us at Gallifrey in February. Which is
I heard. I saw that tweet.
Yes,
but it means stepping into an airplane and the cost of the flight and all that. Anyway, so there are barriers that exist in today's world. And now that with the internet, we're a more global community. The Gallifreyan Embassy is a international fan organization now. So the Second Life affords us an opportunity to have a meeting where there won't be any geographical barriers. The only you would just need a computer and a broadband internet connection, a contemporary Mac or Windows computer, and as I said, broadband internet, and you can join us. So it's a way to have a virtual meeting in a sense, and essentially that's what it is, to come together. There's music, there's a DJ. One of the landowners there, Vic First, is him along with some others have put together this whole land of Doctor Who, which is based on Cardiff in Wales.
Sweet.
But he has working TARDISes there. Last time he did demonstrations, and you could join one of his tours, virtual tours of Cardiff and all the Doctor Who museums and TARDISes and all the thematic stuff. There's a even Torchwood is represented there. The hub, it was, well, I want to say is or maybe was there after Children on Earth. I don't know what the status is. I think Eric was there once and saw it. I don't want to give anything away, but I think by now, safe.
Yeah, I think we can give out spoilers on Children of Earth.
It's November. That came out in July. So I guess
yeah, we're a spoiler cast. We don't really care. We just put, hey, you know, spoilers in here. So, yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully, I'm sure it still exists. The work that they put into it is outstanding. And anyone that hasn't experienced Second Life, it's you got my only warning is that it's very engrossing. You lose yourself in there for many hours if you're not careful. So that's my only warning. But otherwise, it's a free service. You download the client on your computer and join us on the 14th, the land of Katrina. Right now, tentatively, I want to say 1 p.m. Eastern time. That translates to it's a 3-hour difference in Second Life time. So, but the time hasn't really been set yet. So
okay.
Transmit control signal.
Could you tell us where to find you online, on Twitter, and anywhere else?
Well, our website is thegallifreyanembassy.org or podshock.net for Dr. Hugh Podshock. And you can find me on Twitter at Louis Trapani. It's twitter.com/Louis Trapani. And Art Trap is my website, arttrap.com.
Eric, go ahead. You better tell us something. Where can we find you, Eric?
On Twitter, Bullet33.
Hey, you can call me. I mean, you can't call me. Well, you can call me if you want. But you can find me on Twitter at FancyFembot. Or you can give me a call at 773-336-2686. That's 773-336-2686. And we will see you at the party next time. Bye.
Cheers.
Thank you. took me from the year 5000 on a lonely asteroid. He said he was looking for a droid. He was my master, his attention I did crave. To him, I was nothing more than a slave. We saved creatures all across the galaxy, but nobody ever thought to save me. And I wonder what life would be like if I could choose not to say affirmative. People tell me what to do and I just roll along, but inside my metal head I'm singing my song. Tarantulous compliance, what have you done to me? I'm a fraction of the shadow of the canine I could be. I see other dogs in the park fetching sticks and digging bones. Never has a tin dog ever felt so alone. Is this what I'm reduced to? Just a casual memento. I've seen all of creation, but to it I'm incidental. But there's more to this automaton than they will ever know. I'm more than just alloys and circuits. I have soul, and I've got dreams just like everybody else. I could conquer the world. Conquer myself. And I wonder what life would be like if I could choose not to say affirmative. People tell me what to do and I just roll along, but inside my metal head I'm singing my song. So wretched compliance, what have you done to me? Fraction of the shadow of the canine I could be. I see other dogs in the park fetching sticks and digging bones. Never has a tin dog ever felt so alone. Choose not to say affirmative. People tell me what to do and I just roll along, but inside my metal head I'm singing my song. Treacherous compliance, what have you done to me? I'm a fraction of the shadow of the canine I should be. I see other dogs in the park.
I meant to tweet about it at the time, but there's one part where K-9 in the episode was like, Master Luke! And I was like, oh my god, he sounds like C-3PO. The hell?